of the day on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Brought to you by The Pig and Duke, your neighborhood pub at the corner of 12th and 12th Southwest, where you can win a trip to see the Seahawks versus the 49ers with a pigskin club.
Well, the big story of the day comes from the Canadian Football League. The fact that we've got two undefeated teams colliding on Thursday up in Edmonton, the 4-0 Eskimos, the 3-0 Calgary Stampeders. The big story brought to you by the Pig and Duke, your neighborhood pub on the corner of 12th and 12th Southwest, where you can win a trip to see the Seahawks versus the 49ers. All of that at the Pigskin Club. Rob Kerr, Bruce Dobigan with you, and we've talked about it all afternoon. And Bruce, we're going to hear from Bo Levi Mitchell. I had a chance to go one-on-one with him. He's very much a we guy. There is not a lot of I in the conversation of Bo Levi Mitchell. He's very well-schooled.
He's got all that stuff.
Yeah. You know, and he was one of the first guys. I mean, you look at that game on Friday, 10-7 is the final for a CFL game. There was not a lot attractive about it. Brad Sinopoli with an outstanding run, play of the week. But other than that, far from a classic. Yet, you know, here was Bo Levi Mitchell setting the tone after that game, going, doesn't matter, we won. That's the only thing that matters right now. And in July, there's probably something to that. No?
Are you playing the tape?
No.
Oh, I thought that was a call for the tape.
No, no. That's a call for you to jump in. We'll play Bo Levi Mitchell.
I have
in
no opinion
here.
On the subject. No, I'm just, he's I mean, John Huffnagel has coached a lot of quarterbacks in his day.
Mm-hmm.
And Dave Dickinson was an excellent quarterback, and he's done some good work.
Yep.
And clearly this young man is their protege. And he's been schooled in the right way at what to say and how to do it and how to play it. As we mentioned earlier, I was really surprised that they didn't yank him in the third and fourth quarter and give Drew Tate a chance to do some stuff to see they couldn't shake it up. That spoke volumes to me about their commitment to him.
Yep.
And you can see why in the interview when he's talking that way, he knows what the job is. He knows what the job is working for John Huffnagel, I should say.
Well, and I think you brought up the point that, and I agree with you wholeheartedly, we figured out what the leash is. We found it. We wondered going in, you know, there's different theories to coaching. There's different theories to, you know, handling quarterbacks. We saw a team across the way in that game that switched in the third quarter. Clearly, they had an ineffective quarterback. I just never got the sense that, you know, Huffnagel or Dickinson was prepared to lay this at his feet. They just couldn't get much done. He was at times scrambling for his life. I think it's safe to say that was, of the three games, that's probably the one which the opposition got the most pressure on the quarterback. I mean, the offensive line, a young offensive line, and we talked about that heading into the season, has been pretty good. Yeah. But there were times where Bo Levi Mitchell was running for his life in that game.
Yeah, a little bit. And again, you don't have John Cornish to hand off to, and you have a couple of your other weapons aren't there. But he was poor. I never had a sense that he was desperate. I never had a sense that he was in trouble. I never had a sense that he was just throwing the ball all over the yard just for the sake of doing it, as I've seen a lot of CFL quarterbacks do so far this season. So, you know, there's a lot of good indicators there, and he clearly has a good arm. He clearly has a good arm. There were a couple of times too where I wasn't even sure that the receiver had run the right pattern.
Mm-hmm.
They seemed to be the two guys not sort of on the same page. And that's something that'll work itself out over the course of the year.
Looks composed too, doesn't he?
Yeah. Well, he's a good Texas boy, and you know, they grow quarterbacks down there, don't they? Drew Tate's a Texas boy too.
Yeah.
They know how to do it. But you can see with, you know, the leadership quality, etc. Drew Tate's a fiery guy, and he can be an inspirational guy. But Mitchell seems like a guy they feel is there for the long run. So,
do we see Drew Tate this year?
Yeah, I think we will.
I do too.
I think at some point there might be a chance for him to play, if only because at his age he's not a prospect anymore.
Mm-hmm.
At his age, if you might be able to trade him for something in the offseason, then at least make sure you've got a guy who hasn't just been doing third down hups the whole year.
Yeah.
So
the flip side to that, though, is what we saw on Friday. I would think, now he wasn't talking about it today, but I would think he's got to give him some confidence, Bruce. In the sense, if he goes up to Edmonton and it's a couple of two and outs, he's probably not looking over his shoulder right now.
No, and there's likely to be some two and outs, again, with John Cornish not playing.
Yeah.
So
we don't talk about that enough, do we? I mean, we talk about the injury, but just the fact of not having Cornish in the lineup. It's a luxury this team's had for the last several
seasons.
And Walter's
a good running back.
He's good.
And he did what they needed him to do, but he's not John Cornish. He can't break a game open on his own.
Had a chance earlier today to go down to practice and spend a little time with the starting quarterback of the Calgary Stampeders.
I want to talk about Edmonton, but take me back to watching the tape of that Hamilton game. What were your thoughts of that one in retrospect?
Oh, you got to win. You know, I know we had to fight for it. It's not the way we wanted to look. But it's very hard to win this league. It's hard to put a lot of the wins together. And right now we're 3-0.
You could put that in. There's a value to that, isn't there? Finding ways to win different games?
There is. There's going to be times where you don't have certain guys. Things aren't going right, and maybe you lose somebody important in that game. And, you know, sometimes you just got to grind. You know, you got to grind. Find a way to win because, you know, sometimes the tips, the bouncing and stuff don't go your way.
A little bit about their defense. Having gone through that game, it seemed like they were really well prepared.
Yeah, obviously they were. You know, they were well prepared. You know, they just got a lot of guys in the coverage and tried to make us, you know, run the ball and throw checkdowns all day. They tried not to let us get over the top. You know, we still took our chances to get over there. We weren't successful with them. You know, but if we are, you know, the game's a lot different. So
it's funny how the game goes. I mean, a very, you know, very tightly contested game. But the one touchdown is a spectacular play. Just walk me through that and what Mr. Sinopoli was able to do. Sorry.
Brad made a great play, man. That was just a run pass option. You know, the guy that came around the edge was actually supposed to be blocked. He did a great job avoiding him, stiff-arming the guy, having good ball control, getting upfield. And, you know, once he made the decision, you know, he kept with it. And that was the biggest thing. It wasn't, should I pass, should I run? You know, he made the decision to run, and he took off. You know, guys were blocking downfield very well. And, you know, he found a way to get in the end zone.
So 2 weeks in a row, you guys have been able to come up with something kind of, I don't want to, you know, a little razzle-dazzle trick play, whatever you want to call it. How often, how many times can you go to that well? Is that something that presents itself on a game-by-game basis?
No, I mean, that play right there in the Hamilton game is a play that every team in this league runs. Mm. You know, just instead of handing off to the receiver in front of me, I hand it off behind him. You know, it's just a little bit of difference. I mean, everybody out here runs it, so it wasn't a big trick play or anything like that.
Okay. A thought on being 3-0 at this point. Obviously, you couldn't ask for a better record. How is this season played out for you so far, Bo?
Well, that's the most important thing is, you know, right now we just look at the fact that we're 3-0. You know, we don't look at the fact that we blew anybody out or that we played a really close game. You know, because this early in the season, it's not about, you know, how you win, it's about if you win. So we're trying to put together some wins and string them together. You know, the West is going to be a very tough conference this year. So we got to string them together now and make sure we get hot at the right time.
Feel a little unusual that you're finally playing your first West Division opponent in week 5?
Yeah, I mean, it's different, but, you know, it's the CFL. So it's a different game, man. There's a lot of different aspects and nuances of it. So, you know, finally getting to play a division game is fun. You know, we're excited about it. You know, we know we're going with a good team at Edmonton, undefeated. Good team on offense, good team on defense. You know, so we're excited to go out there for the challenge.
Tell me about tackling Edmonton's defense. Pretty dominant performance in Winnipeg last Thursday.
Yeah, but, you know, the same token, you know, our guys have had dominant performances on the defensive side. You know, not letting up a passing touchdown. But, you know, Edmonton's a very good team, a very good defense. We respect those guys. They've made a lot of good plays this year. They play confidently. So, you know, you got to go out and try and rattle them.
What's it like preparing for a team that's really picked themselves up off the mat? I mean, they're a totally different team than they were last year. You know what they were last year, you prepared for them. Now you're preparing for a different team. And I guess the word is trust. Do you trust what they've done so far through 5 weeks?
Yeah, absolutely. I don't think you can ever judge a team based off the previous season, you know, whether it's a championship team or a, you know, 0-18 team. You know, they're a hot team right now. They've put together some really good wins. They've had a couple close ones, but, you know, for the most part, they've been able to get out there and put some points on the board. So as a defense, we got to go out, you know, stop that, control Mike Riley, control those receivers, you know, stop their run game, shut it down. And offensively, keep the ball in our hands, you know, make sure that we grind that defense down a little bit, you know, take our shots when we need to, and just put up points.
Bo, they're a team that's had a lot of success taking the ball away. Is there anything that you see in preparation for them that makes them, you know, more successful in interceptions and those types of things?
I mean, just kind of like Hamilton, they drop a lot of guys. You know, there's going to be times they bring it. There's going to be times when they don't. You know, they like to get a lot of guys in coverage and in different spots in coverage than you would normally see. You know, they still cover the same zones as everybody else. They just get to it a different way. So you got to go out, see your receiver, make a throw.
Talk to me about you. What do you know about this game now that maybe you didn't know a month ago as the starter?
Well, not very much, man. You know, I am learning, but it's more, you know, on the field stuff and just the feel of the game. I'll always be learning, you know, even when I'm a 15-year vet. But, you know, for me, it's just going out there and getting the experience playing, getting in rhythm with these guys, you know, make sure we stay on point with what we're seeing out there. Just go out and have fun. You know, that's the biggest thing for me is, you know, I'm passionate about this game and I love it. So it's making sure that, you know, I go out and show that.
You've got a great deal of composure as well. Where does that come from?
I think playing a lot of football games. I mean, I've been in championship games since, you know, high school, college, two different kinds in college, and then you know, obviously coming here my first year and, you know, watching us go to the championship and seeing how guys reacted to it, how guys handled it, you know, watching Ricky on the other side of the ball take care of it. So, you know, I learned a lot from the guys around me. I learned a lot from my surroundings, but you know, a lot of it comes from that coaching staff that we have, you know, having guys that have played the game, done it so well. So, you know, I learned from them.
Final question. Tell me about working with Dave Dickinson and what you picked up from him.
Oh, it's huge, man. Just working with a guy that's been so successful wherever he's been, you know, whether it's coaching, playing, you know, it doesn't matter. He's just one of those guys that, again, knows how to win. And that's the most important thing to us and our team. And that's what he talks about. You know, don't worry about your stats. Don't worry about what they look like. Don't worry about turnovers. You know, obviously, you know, control them as much as you possibly can. But don't let them beat you up. Just go out there, play the game, and play to win.
Well, Levi Mitchell, there's a nice historical connotation to him or a connection, sense that he's being, you know, coached by one of the all-time greats for the Stampeders and Dave Dickinson, or at least part of that, you know, really well thought of crew of 90s quarterbacks, and spent the offseason in San Diego working out with Jeff Garcia. And to me, I mentioned it in that conversation with him. You know, he shrugged it off, played in bowl games and everything. And I suppose that's true, but I'm just really blown away by his composure, Bruce.
Yeah.
You know, and again, I didn't, if I watched that game in BC at the end of the preseason, I didn't see that composure. And that would have been a situation where you could have had it, and then the points are on the board, and that's where you lose it. But, mm-hmm. you know, even in that game on Friday.
Well, this is where, too, where although it didn't turn out to be a successful year on the field with Kevin Glenn, this is where you see the effect of a Kevin Glenn, though,
mm-hmm.
who's a pro's pro,
mm-hmm.
and who Bo could see in the meetings every day and see how he handled himself, how he prepared for starts, how he did all of those kind of things. And although Kevin's gone to BC, you can see the nurturing, the, you know, the role modeling sort of paying off in a guy like that.
Yep.
It so helps to have somebody you see do the job and show you how it's done. And that doesn't mean throwing a football or handing off a football. That means how you prepare for a game, what time you show up at the practice facility, how you relate to the other players in the offense, etc. And Kevin Glenn is a pro's pro. He's a terrific man. He's, you know, made a lot of it for himself financially, I think, off the field. The kind of guy you want around your people, and I think that's part of what we're seeing here.
Yeah, and the other is definitely Dave Dickinson.
Yeah.
And we were, you know, kind of talking. There's no doubt that the succession plan is in place. You know, he's the assistant coach or, you know, and the offensive coordinator. He'll take over from Huff at some point. But you've been to enough Stampeders practices. When they break down to the positional coaching and stuff, it's so bizarre to watch because, you know, you got the yellers and the screamers and you got the, you know, the real motivational guys. And then you watch
O-line coaches are the screamers.
Right, right, yeah. Exactly. And then, you know, you got Dave Dickinson and his three quarterbacks, and, you know, they could be playing cards. They could just, yeah. you know, just hanging out, talking about the position. And he's just showing them subtle things, you know, showing them where to hold the ball in the hand, just subtle little things. But, you know, to that end about, you know, there is something to be said about he's my coach, this is a player.
Mm-hmm.
They've had the nice blend for both him and Tate
yeah.
over the last couple of years, right? Yeah. I think when Henry was there, Henry still wanted to be the starter. And I'm not saying he was the bad teammate. I'm not saying this was Brett Favre mm-hmm. versus Aaron Rodgers. I'm not going to develop the next guy. But I think in the last couple of years, it's become quite apparent where this was going.
Yeah. One of the things that keeps getting reinforced to me as a truism in pro sports,
right.
and the Flames last year sort of illustrated it again for me, is just this thing about the room. And about having a room that works and having a dynamic within the room. Look, the Flames weren't a good team particularly, but they had a way of doing business that worked, and everybody
yeah.
knew who they were and where they fit in, etc. And I was very admiring of the coaching staff for doing something that way. It's not easy.
No.
And the Stamps have managed to do that, and they have personalities in there, have had personalities. You know, the days of Rambo and Nick when he was first starting
Copeland.
Out. Copeland. And they yeah. were doing the water skiing and the stuff yeah. in the end zone. I mean, they managed to keep that together. And we see teams all the time. The Leaf fans get all excited about our team. I'm going like, how can you win when your core is Dion Phaneuf and Kessel and Van Riemsdyk and those guys? How can you win? And so it gets back to the Stampeders again. There's guys in there who know what it takes to win because they've seen guys who know how to win.
Right.
And that's a huge thing. It puts you ahead of, you know, six of the teams. Why were the Alouettes, the only consistency with the Alouettes was Jim Popp and the quarterback.
Yep.
But those two guys managed to find a way to reinforce what it meant to be an Alouette and how you're going to win.
Yeah, but two guys critical in shaping that dressing room, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. And the you're talking about the Red Wings and their dilemma. The Alouettes look very similar to the Red Wings at the moment.
Don't they?
Yeah. Like, you know, we've always been able to find the rabbit in the hat, and right now I don't know that Tom Higgins is exactly the ideal coach that they wanted, and the quarterbacking thing is like Troy Smith could be good, he could be not so good, you know?
Yeah, they're
in the same boat as the Red Wings.
Yeah. Well, you know, to bring it all the way back to the top, is it is the big story, is the fact that we've got this marquee matchup heading into Week 5. Means a bit more to perhaps the Eskimos than it does to the Stampeders. You and I, again, talking off, we were like mine off the air. We were talking about this. Pat and I talked about it last week. I feel a little bit for the Red and White. They can do whatever they want during the regular season. Yeah. They can put up 200 points on a team.
It's tough.
Won't matter till November.
Yeah, it's tough. And, you know, again, getting back to what happened in Vancouver was that the expectations got too high in Vancouver with the hockey team.
Mm.
And it ate them up. They couldn't handle it. And you see that in Calgary to a certain extent. They've set the expectation bar so high for regular seasons, the fans are going like, I'll go see the Saskatchewan game and I'll go see the Eskimos when they come in. But don't wake me up until Thanksgiving. And that's tough.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you lose your market through being good and being consistent over the years.
You brought up the Atlanta Braves earlier.
Yeah. Speaking of up, I'm dropping.
And then the chair continues to move further to the ground.
It is.
But the Atlanta Braves, with all those in the 90s, with all those championships and regular season pennant wins, but nothing to show for it in terms of championships. The championships, even the, you know, we were just talking about the Alouettes. It was at the end of Anthony Calvillo's career that they finally started cashing in.
Yeah.
They were great every year, but couldn't beat the West. It was only towards the end that they got a couple of Grey Cups and turned that into something. And right now, I mean, John Huffnagel has constantly put out a great product. John Huffnagel has constantly brought in the next stars. He's managed his team very well, but has only one championship to show for it. And that's
his first year.
And that jumps out at you.
And the league is full of guys that he's brought into the league. You know, you look at rosters and other teams. How many former Calgary guys? It's managing expectations is a really tricky business in a place where people really care. And there are a lot of people who care in Calgary. But if it was the level of the Flames, it would be even worse. And the Flames got into that syndrome a little bit too.
Sure, they did
in the late Darryl years.
Yeah.
Which is that, hey, you took us to the precipice. We expect to be close there every year and. Naturally, it didn't happen, and that's how you ended up being at the bottom.
Looking forward to it, though, this Thursday. It will be the Battle of Alberta.
Slobber knocker.
Boy, the league could use it, couldn't it?
I hope so.
The league could use a big-time offensive game from both quarterbacks, some terrific plays. I hate to say some controversy, but a little bad blood, if you can do it without hurting anybody sort of thing. It would be great if this thing could live up to the billing.
A 17-15 with one team getting up to 15 on the last play of the game is not what we want.
No. Give me 50.
It's up to the league.
Give me 51-49 or something like that.
Again, you know, the NFL, the evil empire, but when the NFL sees offense going down, they trick the rules. They figure out a way to get to a certain number.
That's the big story of the day as the Stampeders get set. Bo Levi Mitchell gets set to take on the Edmonton Eskimos coming up on Thursday. No doubt we'll be talking about this one as the week plays itself out. Of course, the big story of the day brought to you by the Pig and Duke, your neighborhood pub at the corner of 12th and 12th Southwest, where you can win a trip to see the Seahawks versus the 49ers with the Pigskin Club. We'll take a break when we come back. Headlines around the corner. Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Talk to your boss. It's totally okay to stream Sportsnet 960 all day and night on your work computer. In fact, it's new company policy. Sportsnet.ca/960. We do the research, filter out the crap, add some opinion, and fire it up for you on the drive home. Headlines start now. Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
All the buildup in the CFL to week number 5 has to do with Alberta and the Battle of Alberta. The 4-0 Edmonton Eskimos coming off a 26-3 drubbing of Winnipeg play host to the 3-0 Calgary Stampeders, who squeaked by Hamilton on Friday by a 10-7 score. Injuries, the story of the day again for the Stampeders. Who is and who isn't in the lineup? Well, the Stampeders got some good news today, at least on the defensive side of the ball, as they got one body back, and that is Deron Mayo, one of their linebackers. Looks like he's ready to go. He did practice. Keon Raymond did not practice. No John Cornish for the Calgary Stampeders either. He was surprised, I guess, the best way to put it was yesterday was a little bit of a surprise, as he didn't show up for practice, had a little bit of a setback. The Calgary Stampeders are not going to take any chances with John Cornish. He's been ruled out for Thursday's game up in Edmonton. Having said that, John Huffnagel, talking to the media today, and was asked about his defense through three games. He's given up only one touchdown against, yet Huffnagel a little measured in his praise.
They're playing good football. They've had the luxury of playing against two very, very young quarterbacks, and we can't overlook that. But regardless, I mean, do they get paid to play? Our players get paid to play and to focus and play good defense, and that's what they've been playing.
So the Battle of Alberta goes this Thursday up in Commonwealth. And again, everybody kind of statistically racking the brain. When's the last time? There have been many good games, I would say. Not great games, but good games between Calgary and Edmonton over the last little while. But Bruce, it's been a long time since the teams come in with lofty records like this early on in a season.
It's not as bad as the hockey rivalry has gotten.
No.
Over the last two decades. The hockey, when one team's up, the other's down. Edmonton seems to have figured out a few things and pulling themselves up by their bootstraps. That's good to see. But they haven't exactly gone through the cream of the crop yet in the league. And I think the Stampeders represent a significant challenge for them. And that's why it'll be a big game for them and to proving to their fans that this 4-0 isn't just, you know, flash in the pan. We beat a bunch of bad teams. So that'll be interesting to see how they approach it. I'm sure they'll be ready for it. And as you said, the Stamps missing a couple of guys, likely short week of prep. Could afford to maybe let one go get away. You know, nobody's going to pressure them in terms of a playoff spot. It could be a good spot for Edmonton.
Big game. Like, if you can come out, this is one of those games. We can talk about, you know, play calling, and we can talk about matchups, defense versus defense. Throw that all aside, just from a league perspective. This is a pretty important game. If you can get something exciting out of this, this could roll, at least here in Alberta, right into Labor Day then.
Well, as I say, what are the narratives in the league this year? We haven't really got a narrative. We haven't got a – who's the next great young superstar that the league is producing? Hard to say based on the first few weeks. What's the team
was
that's kind
Drew
of sexy
Willie.
And interesting?
It was Drew Willie.
Yeah, well, he got defrocked, as they like to say, the other day.
And to your point, the narratives really haven't been flattering. They've been penalties. The East has really struggled against the West.
Different play, guys being undisciplined.
Right.
Some stupid stuff.
Yeah.
By the way, the league isn't helped when you trade a defensive back in midweek to another team and he has to start right away for the Argos. I mean, those things don't look good either. Your stadiums aren't opening on time, and guys are being traded midweek and playing for another team. It just tends to look a little bush.
League could really use a great Battle of Alberta. To hockey we go. We're in arbitration season a little later on in the final.
Is Rod Black doing the game? Because then it'll be a great game.
I don't know.
He will see things he's never seen before. Can you believe it?
5:25. I'm not even going there. 5:25, Chris Johnson from Sportsnet will join us to talk about arbitration, but let's head there first because a couple of arb cases, one that got hurt, one that didn't make it to arbitration. We'll start with the Toronto Maple Leafs have agreed to a new deal avoiding arbitration with Cody Franson. It's a one-year, $3.3 million deal. He made two last year. Franson's coming off consecutive one-year deals. He is also coming off a season in which he was second in the National Hockey League in hits, which surprised me a little bit, was able to put up some pretty decent offensive numbers. But it's a Leafs team that has picked up a couple of veterans in Roman Polak and Stefan Robida. They were also dangling Cody Franson rather publicly to the Montreal Canadiens for Josh Georges. Georges refusing to waive his no-trade would eventually get moved to the Buffalo Sabres. You get the sense that this might be the last time Franson and Leafs swap signatures on a deal, that he might find work elsewhere.
What do they say in the NBA? Sign and trade kind of deal? Yeah, well, possible. And certainly, when you're trading a guy, knowing what his obligations are, and knowing the fact that you're not obliged to next year after this year is also can be an attractive thing. Right-handed shot, guy with a little offense. There's lots of teams that could use that. And the team in this city,
I think they'll kick tires. I think they should kick tires.
Depends on the price.
Right. Well, we know what the price is for 1 year. Oh, I see. Depends on what you have to give up to get.
They're asking for Monahan. I don't think it's going to happen.
Probably not.
No.
There was one arbitration case that did go ahead, and a bizarre one at that. Vladdy Sobotka, who decided last week that he was going to go to the KHL for the next season, was awarded a $1.4 million deal Now, the Blues came out and said, we're looking forward to having Vladimir in a Blues uniform when he returns to the NHL. We wish him the best of luck in the upcoming season. The 27-year-old had 9 goals, 33 points in 61 games. To me, Bruce, and we haven't talked about him. I like him. I think he's what the Blues need. If you're going to be in that Western Conference, he wins draws. He's, you know, tough to play against. Yeah. I think this is a tough loss for them this year.
Boy, there's a show-me team. There's a team that's, you know, been sitting there, everybody, okay, it's your turn.
Yes.
It's your turn. And St. Louis, you know, they're making baby steps to getting there.
Yeah.
But I don't think anyone liked the way the season ended last year in terms of them saying, okay, this is an ascendant team. And these kind of things, and you know, having to make these kind of deals. And granted, they're not a full payroll team.
Yeah.
They can't afford to spend to the cap all the time. But that, you know, they need all the help they can get back there. And defensive depth is another one of the things in the NHL you got to have.
And that's their strength, their blue line. Right. You know, they've got Petrangelo, they've got Bomeister, who seems to have found his way. I like their blue line. They're going with a younger goalie in Jake Allen. He'll team up with Brian Elliott. And up front, they, of course, added Stastny.
Yeah.
Brought back Steve Ott. Okay, push. I don't know. I mean,
to each his own.
Yeah, to each his own. Yeah. But you're right. This is another team that, you know, have they done enough to stay in it? Paul Stastny is one of those guys that I think he was really sexy on July 1st.
Yeah.
But if we were talking back in March 1st, we were kind of scratching our head going, what's happened?
Mm-hmm.
Because unlike there was no LeBron James, there was no big names in free agency, he became the belle of the ball.
And we'll see how he does with the coach.
Yeah.
The new coach.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, exactly.
He's not known to be a handholder.
And speaking of Stastny's former team, Ryan O'Reilly, we talked about this earlier. O'Reilly on Wednesday scheduled to go to arbitration. Adrian Dater of the Denver Post reporting that two sources told him that O'Reilly is seeking $6.75 million on his contract for next season, about a $250,000 raise from last year. Well, the Avalanche want to pay him $5.525. Now, I understand that's the least, because the arbitrator can only go to 85% of his base salary at 6.5. So they want the least. Again, you talked about it earlier. I talked about it. I think this one goes to arbitration. You still feel that they'll get this one solved ahead of time?
So few people have gone into and there's been other kind of problematic ones.
Mm-hmm.
If there is one, as I said before, if there is one, this is the one that gets past the door.
Right.
But
we are both of the same opinion that a year from now, Ryan O'Reilly's not in the Mile High City.
Colorado's number is very aggressive.
Yeah.
They're sending a message to this guy. They're you know, this isn't a love tap. This is like we're taking you as far back as we can, and we're trying to send a message to you. And his is, well, I still deserve the money.
Mm-hmm.
It's always, you know, interesting to see people who want to leave it in the hands of an arbitrator.
The only thing that intrigues me about this particular case is the age of the player at 23, the position of the player.
Yeah.
I know they move him to the wing, but he is a natural centerman. He's a guy that at 23 already has 5 years of NHL service, has been productive. This is not a case where the Avalanche will lose him for nothing. They'll get something for Ryan O'Reilly if they choose to move him.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. No. There's a lot to like there. The head scratcher is, why is it not working in Colorado? What's the tension there? What's the thing that's not working out? He's clearly a guy who at that age wants that kind of money, and well, he already was given it because the Flames expedited that. But he wants that kind of money, and he wants to be, as I said earlier, an opera player.
A small minor story to that is, of course, when Calgary signed him to that offer sheet, it was an attempt to lure him here to play with Jerome Iginla, to give Iginla that centerman. Yeah. And now Iginla's in Colorado. And
yes, he's leaving.
Probably won't be there. Montreal Canadiens coming to terms on a three-year entry-level deal with their first-rounder from June, Nikita Sherbak. He played in Saskatoon, 28 goals, 50 assists. I bring that up only because we are seeing first-round players signing, and the question always becomes is, what about Sam Bennett in Calgary?
Yeah.
Is
there a rush?
I don't think there is there?
If this was the first week of training camp, I'd start to ask some questions. Different teams are taking different approaches.
Guys later in the draft, you know, Sherbak was taken later in the draft.
Have you heard any indication that there's any kind of...
No, but
sometimes teams want to release it all on a certain date.
Well, my belief is that here in Calgary that, you know, the media, the fan base has become a little skittish ever since Tim Erickson. when Erickson all of a sudden walked away and turned his back on everybody. Now, you know, if you remember, Jay Feaster said, boy, we're going to make sure we tie up our first round pick. So they got, you know, they drafted out of Portland, Berchi. Thank you.
Sven.
Sven, they signed him right away.
Yeah.
Next year they couldn't because they took Jankowski. So I just think there's a little reaction to that. So every time a first-rounder gets signed, there's kind of that, when are they going to sign Bennett? But
well, I mean, what does Bennett want to go back in the draft?
No.
No. So
no.
You know,
he'll be okay.
If somebody tells me that there's been some discord, that he was here for Stampede and things didn't work out well or whatever, a horse fell on him, then you know, maybe fine. But I haven't heard that.
This is a terrible analogy.
And if you would have been the one to tell me that anyhow. So
that's right.
Being my source on the
Rory McIlroy winning his third major. His
before the age of 25.
His former fiancée, Caroline Wozniacki, winning her WTA event over the weekend. And news coming down today that another sports power couple has split.
Ah.
As Alexander Ovechkin has his wedding plans now shelved to tennis player Maria Kirilenko. So they are no more.
What will I tell my wife? It's the only reason she watches the sport, to find out who the players are getting married to.
Yeah. She said today, there's a lot of reasons. Our relationship is over, but I respect Sasha Ovechkin.
Yes.
As a person and as an athlete, I respectfully wish him further sporting success.
And would really...
that's the line of the century right there.
That's how I always got let down by girls.
I respectfully wish him further sporting success.
Maybe she's just irritated he never puts his teeth in.
The Russians have a great history of literature, but of late, Russian literature has been lacking a bit, hasn't it?
I don't know. I got dropped by a few girls, but they never sort of said, good luck in your future endeavors.
Well, respectfully wish you further sporting success.
It was, you know, don't let the door hit you in the posterior.
That's the Hallmark card I want to get, right?
Yes.
The Blue Jays open up a series against the Red Sox tonight. The Blue Jays, of course, on top of the world after winning their last two games.
Three back of the O's.
Yeah. What are you...
not out of it, not in it.
Okay.
Sitting in the worst place you could be.
I was asked in May when they were on top of the world what I thought was going to happen, and I predicted this. So I take no pleasure in reading this.
That what would happen?
Well, they're the Blue Jays.
That everyone would get hurt.
Yeah, they fall off.
Well, that's my question.
Success is too early.
How is it that everybody in this team gets hurt? Year in, year out. Lori plays a hard game, etc. Encarnacion, Bautista spends time on the side. The pitchers all go lame. I mean, this team just has a terrible record for health. Is there something you can do about it? I don't know.
Well, we've seen in the past, this is when you fire the trainers and fire the doctors, right? Because
clearly
it's their fault.
Yes.
You know, there is an element.
I would fire the parents for giving them defective genes.
There is an element of Animal Farm at work here.
See, Alex Anthopoulos come out and say, I'm firing Brett Lurie's parents because they gave him the injury gene.
So let me ask you this. What does Alex Anthopoulos do between now and the trade deadline?
Well, if what we understand to be true today from the reports that the management is going around telling people no extra money, we're not taking on extra money in deals, it tells you that his hands are tied.
Okay.
It tells you that, you know, if you want a certain good player back, but they also want to send you one of their really crap players with a huge contract, the Blue Jays are not going to do that.
Right.
There are, you know, I mean, David Price, that would be a huge commitment for them in players and money. Tells me they're not in that market.
Should they be? I mean, take the financial constraints of Rodgers out of it.
Yeah,
and the reason I say that, Bruce, is some of the conversations we've been having today. It's difficult to get, especially in baseball, with so few teams making it. It is difficult to get there, and if you have a chance, I think you got
to
kick the door down. I think you got
to
mortgage
the playoffs. Consider them
just to get there.
Well, I mean, what if it were me? You know, I just try to get in the Connor McDavid sweepstakes.
That's your answer to everything.
It is a terrible position. And Toronto's a city that wants you to win now.
Yeah.
It's not like, of course, the Raptors kind of raised the room temperature a little bit at the end of the year. No guarantee that they'll do the same next year. They raised the room temperature a little bit. The Leafs are what they are.
But the reason I am so pro-Raptor is because at the beginning of last year, the general prevailing feeling in Toronto was tank it to get Wiggins, right?
Yeah.
Just tank it.
Yeah.
You can do it. Don't worry about it. It's basketball. Tank it. And they go out and they win whatever it was, 50 games. They make it to the postseason. They had a chance to win. All of a sudden, they were the anti-tanking team. And everybody's kind of going, what the hell are you doing?
And they were in the same position as the Blue Jays. Which way should we go? What's happening here? Right? And they did nothing, and it worked out. Which, you know, that as a strategy, sometimes the do nothing and working up.
Remember, everybody was, the GM was getting fired, the coach wasn't getting renewed.
I know, it was a disaster.
Everybody was leaving
it
town.
It was another Toronto disaster.
Lay down, and they did not.
Yeah.
And finally, to football we go. England captain Steven Gerrard announcing his retirement from international football. Just to focus on playing for Liverpool, the 34-year-old midfielder made 114 cap appearances for England over 14 years.
And
agonized.
Guess whose World Cup England jersey I bought?
His?
Yes.
That's about right.
And now it's...
That's about right.
Now it's worth the rubles it was printed on.
Those are your headlines. Oh, boy. News breaking out of Minnesota. This just in. We'll read it before we read it on the air. So we'll take a break.
Oh.
We'll come back and we'll discuss... some stories that are breaking around the Minnesota. Oh, it's nothing but peaches and rainbows. It's Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Proud to broadcast from Calgary, Alberta, Canada. Sportsnet 960, The Fan. Talking sports in the afternoon. This is The Big Show on Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Kind of a cool day in Calgary. A little rain this morning.
We needed it.
Some this afternoon. Pat Steinberg is on a well-deserved vacation. He'll be back, I think, for a couple days next week and then gone again. But I hope he is enjoying his brief respite from all of this. He is Bruce Dobigan, and he, too, has earned a vacation.
One and done for this week. Back all
well, that
week.
That in the chair doesn't work, so pretty much we're done. We can't have co-hosts.
Statement.
I'm Rob Kerr, if you didn't
know. Can I get
one
of those kits and I can just do this at home for my chair that doesn't sag?
What did you say? Can I get
one of those
kits?
One of those kits.
Kits. Oh, okay. Because no, you can't. No, you can't.
Freudian.
I don't know what's going on here.
I want one of those little, and they're so handy dandy and small now.
What?
The portable kits for doing them from your home.
Oh, I thought you meant... Sorry, you mean you want to podcast something, is essentially what you want to do.
No, I want to sit in my home and do this
show.
So I'm not... This chair doesn't insult me by dropping to the floor every 5 minutes.
They're somewhat adamant that they don't want us doing that. I mean, of all of the occupations in the world, this is clearly the one that could be done from someone's home, right? For all anybody knows, it's done from our house, except we just said it wasn't. I thought, okay.
ESPN does that all the time.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. John Clayton and all those guys?
Yeah.
Absolutely. But Pete Weber, the voice of the Nashville Predators.
The one and only.
He has his own studio.
Yeah.
And this is inside baseball and far beyond what anybody really cares about. But he'll join you down an ISDN line. You give him the SPID numbers. He'll dial in.
Yeah.
And you can talk to him. He'll call anybody's show. Fantastic.
Well, that's what I want to be. I want to be Mr. Available.
Well, aim high. Later on, Helene St. James from the Detroit Free Press.
Helene. Not Haleen. Not Helen.
Helene.
Like
not
Helena?
Not Helen, indeed.
And not Helena.
Not, no. Helene St. James from the Detroit Free Press. Chris Johnson from Sportsnet. He'll join us. Arbitration beginning today. We kind of alluded to this story going into break, and I'm glad... This is where I get myself into trouble. Somebody hands me a story, and I go, I read the headline clearly. But
you did a veteran move, didn't you?
Yes, I bought myself time.
Yes, you said, "Let's go to the commercial so I can read what's on."
Well,
here.
That's only because I started
the headlines
off.
Read the headline.
No, well, Wild Vanna connected to federal gambling investigation.
Whoop, whoop,
but remember,
whoop,
I started
whoop.
The 2 o'clock by reading off last year's ARB cases.
Yeah.
Going, Sam Gagner's up tomorrow from Edmonton. No, he's at Phoenix now or
it
Arizona.
Happens.
Yeah.
Anyway, called the Echo guy by the wrong name too. By the way, once.
Here's what we need to know. Minnesota Wild forward Thomas Vanek voluntarily appeared at a federal court building in upstate New York today. It's connected to an ongoing federal gambling investigation. It sounds like he has been called as a witness. Thomas Vanek is not charged with any crime. He voluntarily came to federal court with his lawyer. Law enforcement sources said he's connected to a gambling investigation that's born out of Rochester, New York. I'm just trying to get to the where are they? Earlier this summer, three men were indicted on gambling and money laundering charges, with the Marina Bar named as the meeting place for cash payments and drop-offs. Former Sabres teammate Nathan Paich is described as being involved in the partnership that owned the restaurant and bar. So again, Wild's Thomas Vanek connected to this, but has just been called in as a witness.
I've been to that bar.
Have you?
Yep. Oh, wait, sorry, I was at the Anchor Bar. Pardon.
Yeah. Marina Bar's in Rochester. That's correct.
Yeah.
That's correct.
Sorry. Some nautical theme.
Not the summer that Thomas Vanek was thinking he was going to have, was it?
I thought when you said he was indicted, I thought maybe some people in Montreal were going to have him charged for disappearance.
No.
Without permission.
Sadly, not.
I can't remember a guy who looked so good and who was so poised for the big payday after like a little bit of the playoffs, and then by the end of his playoff run, not so much anymore.
But isn't that the true test?
Yeah, that's what I mean. That's why you play more games. That's why sample size is really important.
Well,
for all of these people who hate analytics, but sample size, it's important.
The flip side of that is Marin Gaborik, right? But you know, I remember distinctly at the trade deadline that Gaborik seemed like some sort of booby prize. That did you pay a lot to get Marin Gaborik out of Columbus? And, you know, it was real easy to be down on him. He had been injured. He hadn't really put up numbers, even his last year in New York. You know, early on in Columbus it worked and it didn't work. And it was almost like, well, I guess they wanted too much for Mike Camilleri, and Thomas Vanek went to Montreal. So they end up with Marin Gaborik. And then you begin to listen to people like Dean Lombardi, who said, no, no, no. 2009, when he was a free agent, we made a hard pitch for him. Right. We liked him. This is why we liked him. We never forgot him, so we were happy to get him. And again, I don't know. You can speak to this better than I can. The thing I thought about Gaborik and why it worked in L.A. was they didn't ask him to come in and run the line.
Yeah.
They asked him to come in and be part of it.
Contribute.
Yeah. Did Thomas Vanek not go to Montreal for the sole purpose of kind of raising the water level of kind of, okay, now we've got somebody these other guys can play with?
They wanted Vanek's role. I think Vanek's role had to be bigger in Montreal than Gabrick's in L.A., if that's what you mean. I think Gaborik was much, he had more guys to sort of disperse it out over in the L.A. lineup. I think Vanek in Montreal had to play a bigger, more prominent role.
Right.
And maybe that's why he didn't show so well. Maybe teams understood that shutting him down would shut down the Montreal offense after having seen a little bit of it.
Sure.
It's hard to say. And Vanek's one of those guys. He's I've forgotten now who the Russian player who got chopped on the hand in the playoffs. And
Not Markov. Sorry.
For Montreal.
Just retired last year.
Yeah, anyhow.
Or last week.
He was one of those guys, too. When he looked great, he was fantastic. When he wasn't, he looked indifferent. And that's the Vanek thing. He's, when he's not at the top of his game, he can look indifferent, even though he's probably still playing at a high skill level.
Yeah. Horses for courses, though. Here we are talking about the Montreal Canadiens, and I know it's a while ago. But to me, as those playoffs played out, I thought they were the perfect foil for Boston, yet...
Yes. Oh, absolutely.
And for whatever reason, it just didn't work against the Rangers. Sure. They just looked like a completely different team.
And
right?
The Flames run in 0-4 was a good example of horses for courses, too. They were up against teams that they were suited to.
Yeah. Yeah. No,
they had a Vancouver team that was that didn't believe it could win. And then a couple other things.
But even more so, Bruce.
And the goalie was pretty good, too.
Well, the goalie was really good. But even more so for me, Bruce, this year, and I asked a couple of people. I'm not so sure I didn't ask you this. Used to be in the 80s, you could, the Calgary Flames were built to be the foil for the Edmonton Oilers. You built them, you designed them.
And so you had to beat.
There's a lot of belief that in a salary cap league, you really can't do that. But I still
has disappeared. You're right.
But I still believe that Montreal Bergeron always had his eye on Boston and always knew that he had to go in the same way that everybody ad nauseum talks about Los Angeles now in the West.
Right.
Oh, you got to be big and everything. But I really think he did a nice job of keeping his eye on Boston, knowing that if they were going to have any success, they had to go through the bees to get there.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's you always can tell a poor team because a poor team is learning the lessons 3 years too late and applying them then.
Right.
And they're looking at Boston winning in 11 and saying, oh, well, that's what we need to be doing now. Well, what you need to be doing is where you're going to be in 3 years from now. Where's the league going? Where are the players going? Who are the kids being drafted? What can we do? Where can we go with it? And that's why I always like the – you know, I've always felt so bad for San Jose because I think Doug Wilson has run a really good ship. I think he's been enlightened in most of the cases. I think he's pushed it forward. He's made deals when things didn't work out. I feel badly for him because I really think he should have been rewarded more than he has been. You know, he's not one of those guys who I think has been behind the curve. It just hasn't – they've had a bunch of horses for Coors's playoff series that didn't work.
Yeah. I've always viewed as the Sharks as, and you talked about it earlier. We were talking about the football team.
Yeah,
you got to have that right chemistry in that
room. Yeah,
and you know,
Joe and Marlo.
Bruce, I've said for the last couple of years that you know, as you travel around, you see teams. I see Toronto and San Jose in a similar pickle at 180 degrees of each other.
Right.
I don't think you can turn around and pass wind in Toronto without it being reported by five television stations and captured on three cameras. That
right.
There's so much pressure every day about, geez, why did you do that drill today? Or, you know, and,
sure.
and then you can't, you're almost paralyzed because of all the questioning. Whereas in San Jose, they're not pushed at all.
No.
Nothing happens. Nobody says boo. They get to the postseason, the national media shows up, and all of a sudden, well, what do you mean you're asking me these questions?
Right.
I don't know. It almost seems like they don't have, you know, I think you got to have the right amount of resistance. I think you got to have the
don't
right
you
amount
think
of
that,
people
questioning. Wilson's done a good job in San Jose?
No.
You don't think he's done a good job?
No.
Oh, okay.
No, and I'm sorry when I say that. I think he's hired the right coach, but it's they're just the same thing every year. They're terrific in October, and then in January they make a great run, and everybody loves them at trade deadline, and they get to the postseason, and they go flat.
Mm.
And no,
I think he made bold moves. I think they made bold moves in picking up Thornton and reorganizing the team. I think they brought in good young players.
Sure, I think they've
done a lot of good things.
I guess I'm just looking at the last couple of years. The last couple of years, it's been the same old, same old.
It was
to
a
me.
Terrible, terrible end to the year for them. And
right?
You know, most teams, I couldn't give a flying fadoo about.
Yeah, yeah.
But I really felt for them, you know, getting up three games and losing that way, etc. And I think it was a terrible matchup for them for the first round. Had they been able to get past the first round, I think they could have been that team. But they have, kind of like Vancouver was in 11, winning that first series against Chicago gave them enough confidence to move forward, a team that had no confidence in the past.
Right.
And that's San Jose just needed that one decisive series where they could have put it away, and they didn't.
The one thing that, to me, says it all, and I sat at the Dome one day with Pat and Labardius, and we were talking about San Jose, and I said, I just don't trust them. There's something about them. I mean, they were rolling at the time. And I wasn't being prophetic or anything. That was my opinion.
Maybe the young guys will change that. Maybe the young guys, as the other guys get, you know, maybe moving Joe or Marlo out might allow the young guys to take over, and they'd be different.
If it's Couture and Pavelski's team, mean?
Yeah.
Vlasic's team? Absolutely.
I just
where I'm with San Jose's, I just never buy what San Jose's telling me.
Mm.
I don't think they're ever as good as they tell me they are. But I don't think they're as bad as they're telling me they are. Oh, we're in a full-blown rebuild.
That's the owner. The German owner wants
changes. But at the end of the day, buck stops with Wilson. He's the guy talking.
Yeah.
And he's the one saying, we're in a full-blown rebuild. We got to – no, you're not. You're not in a rebuild with Pavelski, Vlasic, and Couture. You just aren't.
If your owner's telling you to say that, you're saying that.
That's right. That's right. But that's where my distrust comes from. I don't think they've ever been as good as they tell us they are, and I don't think they're as bad right now as they tell us they are. They're a playoff team as far as I'm concerned.
I thought they had everything they needed this year. And it was heartbreaking to see them lose.
And the fact that they lost the way to L.A., I can sit here and go, oh, well, I didn't. I didn't, but I didn't think they were going to bow out the way they did. And the last point on this one, before I have a very heartfelt goodbye for you, the last one on this one is the thing that Daryl Sutter said when that series was over. The clinching game was game six. When he said that kind of told me. And then later on, I think Doughty in the Stanley Cup final kind of let it out that, you know, we could see it in their eyes. We're not seeing that in Chicago's eyes or whatever. There was a couple of
things.
They
broke their spirit.
There was a little bit about that. Time for the weepy goodbye.
Next week.
Next week? Are you? When?
Supposedly. Now, all next week.
All next week?
Yeah.
Really?
Apparently.
Oh, have we got stuff to talk about?
Uh-oh.
Oh!
You're here all next week?
No.
No, you're here only 2 days.
Yeah, no, three.
Three.
I'm off Monday, Tuesday. But I'll be here Wednesday, Thursday,
I'll work
Friday.
Over with Pat.
If you can leave some of the good stuff for me, look forward to it. Bruce Dobigan,
right.
Everybody. Do you have a book coming out in the fall by any chance?
Two books.
Two.
Yeah. Grant Fuhr biography.
Okay.
Portrait of a Champion.
Right.
And then what is now called Ice Storm.
Okay.
The Rise and Fall of the Greatest Vancouver Canuck Team Ever.
Wow. Ice Storm.
Used to be Practice Perfect.
That's what it used to be?
Yeah.
Now it's Ice Storm?
Well, yeah.
I just feel like there should be sharks in the title.
No, they beat the Sharks.
There we go.
It wasn't the Sharks that were their problem.
Bruce Dobigan, he'll be back with us next week. Coming up in the 5 o'clock hour, lots of hockey talk for you as well. Bo Levi Mitchell. Chris Johnson from Sportsnet will join us. We'll talk about the start of the arbitration season in the NHL, what it means, and some of the changes that have taken place. Helene St. James from the Detroit Free Press. Helene St. James from the Detroit Free Press will join us. It has been an interesting summer for the Winged Wheel. We'll talk to her next. Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Sportsnet 960. Talking sports all the time. No radio? No problem. Download the Rogers Radio app and never be without Sportsnet 960 again. Sportsnet 960, The Fan.